Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 237. Tonight's show is brought to you by Cheese and Boas.
That's not nearly as
That is terrible.
Bothered by cheese.
He is hot and bothered by cheese right now. And he said that just before we hit record, and Matt's like, no, I got one better.
Cheese and stuff. I was making fun of you, Matt. I'm not sure if you picked that up.
Are we just going to wrap it up now?
Yeah, I don't care. In all seriousness, I'll talk about my week. We haven't recorded since the Enduro, have we?
Haven't recorded since last week.
But was the Enduro last week?
Mm. Yeah, it was.
I don't remember you talking about an Enduro. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you hadn't talked about the Enduro.
Okay, so the superfan Jake came down and stayed here. We went and I rode around while he did the Enduro.
Oh, was that picture of you from just now, or is that a memory from a long time ago?
What picture?
There was a picture of you and Jake, all like snuggled up under a blanket.
Yeah, that was from this weekend.
Okay.
I don't think I saw that one.
It doesn't exist. So anyways, I didn't race, and I'm pretty happy with that decision. So that is, I had fun riding around and hanging out, and then I quit kind of having fun because there was a lot of people. But it was good to see my friends, and it was cool to see a bunch of what I would call like customer friends, acquaintances. Saw one dude totally wadded up, almost caught his bike, but I missed it, and helped him out of the trail because he no longer had brakes on his bike, or a brake on his bike, because the lever had left the chat, quite literally. Like,
did you look for the lever?
I know exactly where it happened, and I really want to go find it.
Was the whole thing gone? Like, master cylinder, the whole nine? It was just a hose hanging off?
No, like, the blade was gone.
Because that's the dream.
But, yeah. That was cool. And then, let's see. Only other thing I really did of interest is I did make a new... Well, I went up to BV, and I bought some metal from a welding shop that's closing. And then I built a new bike rack for the inside of my Frontier under the topper. So pretty excited about that. It has what Nissan calls Utilitrack. And best way to describe it is it's got tracks in the floor and then a track right under the top of the bed rail on both sides. I mean, there's like, you know, a track kind of like just inside the wheel well on both sides. I use a piece of angle iron and I made it where it bolts to each track, and sure, you can buy Utilitrack like fancy nuts, or you can cut off a piece of eighth inch plate and just weld a nut to it, and those are exponentially cheaper, and you can use whatever size bolt you want because you're making it yourself. So made two of those, and then I needed to modify both the angle iron and the fork holder because I wanted it in a very kind of like particular way, and the fork or the brake and like the lower post mount of the fork were going to touch the angle iron, so cut a bunch of that out. And then I did something very similar, except I made a little strip that had two nuts in it welded to it that goes in the side, and then measured up and got it high enough off the floor that the wheel won't touch the floor, so you can still slide something in and out.
So if you ever get a 32-inch bike, will the front wheel fit on that holder that you made on the side?
If it doesn't, I just get to use my welder again, so I don't know. I'll burn that bridge when I get there. And then I'll put a picture on Instagram when this post, but there's a little plate that bolts, or the little slit thing goes in the track, and then there's a little plate that bolts to it, and I had done some measuring, and I got a 7/16 bolt, because I wanted it, I didn't want to use half inch, because half inches is, an inch is 25.4, so a half inch is whatever half of that is, 12 point something, what would that be?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, 7/5, and then 7/16, you're going to have to bust out a supercomputer to figure out what the fuck that is.
No, all I care about is that half inch is too big to go through a 12 mil road fork. So I bought a bolt long enough that it would do both a 15 by 110, or it would do 110 or 100. And I made sure it had enough threads to accommodate that variance. And then I welded a nut to the back of the little plate that screws into. And I drilled some holes and screwed a rubber bumper in from the backside so it cinches up against the rubber. And then on the end of the bolt, I used half of an old U-bolt and welded it on as a handle so it's tool-free. So you can take your bike in and out of the truck with no tools, because I have one of those crazy Maxxels with a handle on it that I...
Best Maxxel ever.
Worst Maxxel ever, but...
No, the worst is the one that has, like, that notch.
That one's not spoken about.
That would, like, kind of...
Don't...
The corners would bend.
I think that's a Maxxel, and then the one I'm talking about is a Maxxel Ultimate, and the one that I want is a Maxxel... I said Maximal. It doesn't matter. Maxxel is terrible. Maxxel Ultimate is good. Maxxel Stealth is supreme.
I like the second option. That's my favorite.
Yeah, Maxxel 1 should be illegal.
Yeah, those...
It's shipping on bikes in 2026.
Get the fuck out. When was the last time you've seen that?
I mean, I saw one over the last couple of days, but it was on like an older bike.
Nah, man. I got them in stock on bikes that we stock.
That is terrible. I'm putting that there with flathead screws. 2 years hard labor if you get caught with that.
Well...
When Kenny is supreme leader.
It will be ruthless.
I did look and see, and I was like, these bikes are going in rental. And I got out the old fancy-dancy brain, and I ordered 5 of the bolt-on style to put in stock, because I'm like, we're going to need these this
year. I thought that you could not... I mean, okay, this is what I remember back... I don't know. This is when I worked in Boulder, so like 2016, probably. I had a customer that his brake, no one could make it stop rubbing periodically. And it turned out he had put a bolt in, like the, you know, one you would use an Allen wrench to tighten up, like the one you're saying is the best one. He had put that in an original Maxxel fork that had like the terrible through axle that we're talking about, where it's got, you turn the lever against like a notch.
You
got
to open it up like 180 degrees against this tiny little open metal tang.
Yeah.
To put all the force to undo the axle on there that has inevitably been seized on there. Because stuff happens. How many almost stitches cuts have you gotten from those? Because it's 2 for me.
I actually have, of all the, like, that's amazing because I cut myself on pretty much everything and I have not cut myself on one of those. But I did definitely, like, the first time I had one of those, I immediately, like, broke the corner off of one just tightening my through axle because I wasn't being, like, extraordinarily careful.
I've had 2 almost stitches experiences with those. One on my wrist as it slips, and I almost slipped my wrist, literally. And the other one was on my, like, the, just the palm of your thumb, whatever that's called, your thumb pad. That's not your thumb pad. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about.
That's close enough.
Anyway, fuck those things. God damn it.
But yeah, like this customer, he had put one in that you could just, you tightened with a tool in place of the cammed type, the only cammed type that was available at the time. And it was not tight enough to keep his wheel from just barely shifting enough to make his brake rub. Like, you could tighten it, and then, like, in the stand, if you just grabbed, like, the top and the bottom of the wheel and, like, twisted it, you could make the brake, you know, you could have it adjusted and then twist it with your hands, like, pretty hard. It took some force, but, like, if you think about riding force, it makes sense. And it would make the brake start to, like, ting on the brake caliper. Or make the rotor ting on the brake caliper.
But yeah, Maxxel Stealth. Is that the one that's just an Allen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes. So I'm saying, like, the one that's, like, the middle one that was not the first with the stupid little metal things, like, edges that would break off. Like, the one that cams.
There's the Ultimate. That's the one that's got, like, a nice cam to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that I like. That's the one that I think, that I feel like is, like, the good one to have. And I think the tooled one is... I don't know. I just don't like it as much as the cam style.
That's fine.
Yeah. I'm just a curmudgeon.
All right.
Imagine
so,
that. Out of however many years you've listened to JRA, who did you think would be the curmudgeon first?
Kenny. I mean, he started as the curmudgeon.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah, now I'm the curmudgeon.
I'm not as riled up by stuff anymore because I don't work on bikes on a daily basis anymore.
I'm riled up by a bike, but I'll talk about it later.
All right, Matt. So you made a bike holder thing for your truck.
It's really cool.
Sick.
And that's it.
Excellent.
Your turn.
I rode some moto. Nothing special. Quick trip, like an hour away. Went to a place off Highway 6. I wanted to explore a trail I hadn't ridden before, and I found it and rode it, and it wasn't that great, and I probably wouldn't ride it again, but I did ride it. It was very disused. I had to bushwhack through sagebrush for like a mile or two, which is not a lot of fun, but then it turned out to be like kind of cool. It went down a creek bed that actually had some water in it, some big drop-offs and stuff, and there were some moves in there that were not a good time. But I was going downhill, so I wasn't like as worried about it. But I definitely thought like, if I have to go back up this, it could be problematic. But it was fine. And yeah, that was the ride. Nothing that spectacular. My EXT fork should be back next week, I think. So we're going to see how that revalve goes. I will report back on that. So that'll be fun to go check out. I did a bunch of motorcycle maintenance. New rear tire, new front tire. New tubes, new sealant. What else did I do? New grips. They're lock-on, so you got to like take the whole throttle assembly apart and stuff to do them. Not the end of the world. I moved a mode selector switch to like the inboard part of my bar, which means you got to remove everything else on the left side of the bar, which in my case is a shitload of stuff. And getting all that like lined back up was just extremely time-consuming because there's zero real estate there to work with. Had to redo all the wiring behind the headlight. What else did I do? I feel like I did some other stuff. I've got a new exhaust I'm going to try out, but I haven't mounted it yet. Replaced some lights that broke. What else did I do to it? I feel like there's something I'm missing. But anyway, just did a bunch of motorcycle maintenance, oil change, air filter, just a lot of stuff. It's incredibly time consuming. Definitely a lot slower going working on the motorcycle compared to bicycles. A, I do the bicycles way more often. And yeah, they're just a little bit easier and faster to do.
Well, and B, they inarguably have fewer parts. There's just no way around it.
They do have a lot fewer parts. And like putting some tires on a bicycle, pretty easy. Tires on a moto, a lot more involved.
I mean, even just physically removing the wheel, or you put the bike on the stand, which you don't just pick it up, and then you remove the guard and the brake, and then undo four bolts, and then pull the axle, and now you have a 20-pound wheel. It's just like, everything about it is harder.
Yeah, and like, I don't want to mess up stuff and like get grease on stuff, or bend a sprocket, or bend a rotor, you know, with big old tire levers and all that kind of stuff. So I take those off. It's just easier, and it's also an opportunity to clean those surfaces, re-Loctite the bolts, re-torque them down. So it's just stuff. It just takes a really, really long time. All in all, I think that maintenance was probably 6 hours, maybe more. It's a lot of shit. And I'm just going slow and sipping some beer and semi-enjoying myself. But that's it. I think I'm going to do a nice two-day trip this weekend. I got a bed tent that I'm going to try out for the old Ridgy. So we're going to see how that works out. Just going to go down into the swell area. That's it. Yeah, Matt, you want to hop in the car?
This weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to hop in the car, and I'm going to go do a two-day moto trial thing.
Sick.
So, sorry.
How many hours do you have on your 250, do you think?
One doesn't concern themselves with hours on a trials bike, okay? You don't.
No,
you
no,
don't
no.
Think about
on
it,
your 250, how many hours are on your 250?
Not enough.
That's...
I know the number, and I'm not going to say it aloud because it's
yeah,
sad.
I know the number too, I think, and that's why I'm bummed.
What do you think it is?
10.
I think it's 20.
33.
Okay, that's a little better than I thought. I knew it was going to be sub 50, and I was going to be bummed for you, but...
Well, part of the problem is being hurt. Part of the problem is it's so much easier to ride the trials bike in terms of people. Like, I have an established group
sure
to ride with, but I know it's easy to say, oh, this year I'm going to, but... It'll get cracked out some more.
Yeah.
So
throw that shit in the fucking new giant truck and drive your ass out here.
It's pretty fucking big. Yeah. I have two more funny little quickies that I forgot to talk about. One, drove the Jeep this week. The old check engine light came on, and I was like, it's an old Jeep. And the check engine light's on, and I'm like, well, I got oil pressure, and it's still running. I'm like, fuck it. And I look, and there's nothing coming in the rearview mirror, so I just push the clutch in, key it off, key it back on, dump the clutch to crank it, and I'm like, damn, that didn't fix it. And I went to my buddy's house, and he OBD2'd it, and it has a downstream oxygen sensor problem. And he's like, what you need to do is you need to get your favorite penetrating oil. And I put my hand on his shoulder, and I was like, Scott, I'm not changing this O2 sensor. And he's like, oh, I get that. And I was like, not the way you think I am. I was like, I know it has a leak at the header. I know that there's a leak somewhere else. And there's a bunch of weird putty on this downpipe. And he's like, oh, I was like, yeah, I'm going to replace the exhaust from the engine back when I get around to changing it.
Well, like, if it's the downstream one, it could be a bad cat.
And the downpipe comes with a new cat.
So. Oh, okay. Like you would get new cats. Okay.
Yeah. Like they, yeah. Like there's really, I'm sure there's gaskets and stuff, but I'm pretty sure there's three parts. It's like the header, the downpipe has the cats in it. And then behind that, you bolt on the muffler. Like, so it's just, it's not like it has a downpipe and then like cats that bolt in and then a section for the muffler and da da da. I mean, the truck's like 6 feet long. It doesn't need that many parts.
How many miles does it have on it?
Rounding up 160.
That's reasonable, I guess, for a cat.
Yeah.
But it could be like if it's got some other run issue, it kills the cat because it's rich or burning oil or whatever's happening. And then you put in
it doesn't burn oil.
And then you put in a new cat and then it burns up the new cat.
Yeah. If that were to happen, yeah, we're not going to talk about it on air.
Are you thinking like pipes and welders and stuff? Like straight pipes and welders?
No, just bypass that thing.
Because I did that like to the Ford Explorer I got when I was like, I don't know, in my early 20s. A friend of mine worked at an auto shop and he just... I didn't have the money to like get a whole new exhaust, but I wanted it to like sound cool. So he cut the flanges off and welded a straight pipe between them and just like took a couple of the cat. It had like three catalytic converters in it and he took two of them out with a straight pipe and a welder.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure that if one were really motivated, you could find the right spark plug anti-fouler that fit your O2 sensor and space it out between 0.5 and 0.7 inches to pull it out of the downstream air enough that it would read properly without a cat. But that's just some hypothesis that I've read on the internet. So yep. I'm not going to say that that's true or false.
Yeah. But you don't have to do, you don't have to do emissions where you live, do you?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had a check engine light on in the Civic for 20 years and it ran fine.
How many of those years was it boosted? Yeah.
So it had the check engine light when you boosted it, and it just kept the same check engine light?
Yeah.
No, you took that off at some point, didn't you?
Yeah, it had check engine lights, I think, for other things after that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but they were not important. It ran fine.
And then the other that didn't turn out to be so quick, I bought new shoes this week, and they have BOAs, and I'm not happy about it, but...
Like just normal walking around shoes?
No, cycling shoes.
Oh, okay.
But the not flat pedal enduro shoe is kind of a dying breed these days. So I had to get something that wasn't exactly what I wanted to get what I wanted mostly. So I got
something you could walk in.
Something you can walk in that actually has tread on the sole so you can fucking walk.
Yeah, and you tried the Shimano MET. Like I have the ME7s or whatever. I don't know. I had the Shimano enduro shoe. I think you tried those and like they just didn't really fit your feet that well. Because those are excellent. Like if those fit your feet, they are really good to walk in and they've got like a little neoprene, like mini gaiter on them that keeps stuff from like gravel, rocks and stuff like from getting into your shoe when you're walking, which is really nice if you have to hike a bike. Because normal cycling shoes, they're pretty low cut. So if you walk in them, like stuff gets in there and you have to like stop and dump your shoe out or do the thing where you like bang the toe of your shoe on the ground a bunch of times and like get the rocks down by your toes, like in front of your toes so you don't feel them under your foot.
So we get the GE7.
Yeah, that one's more of like...
We get the GE Gore-Tex. She gone, baby.
Huh.
Shoe doesn't exist anymore.
That might be why I got... I got an extra pair. Like I found some on closeout a long time ago. It was like back when I was about to do... It was 2020. Yeah, so they've... It's been a long time, but yeah, like I was about to do Tour Divide and then it got canceled, but I'd gotten this extra pair of shoes because I'd worn my original ME7s so long that they were getting like pretty blown out and I was going to switch to those like, I don't know, like a month before, but then it got canceled. So, but I have switched to them. Like I went ahead and like started wearing them and they're, I don't know, they're still like my favorite cycling shoe for sure. Like they're not an all out cross country shoe, but they're not a lot more flexible than like a normal cross country shoe. So they were really good, but you could still walk in them. So yeah, those were good, and I'm sad that they don't make them anymore.
Yep, and I can't try Shimano shoes on, so I just went to a different shop and paid fucking retail for shoes because I tried them on, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna buy these, and I'm not gonna be a dickhead and go buy them online or order them from Pearl. So whatever, it's just money. I mean, it sucks, but like,
I mean, they weren't like super expensive.
No, they were like $180 with tax.
Yeah, they weren't like $400
shoes.
No,
but also like instant gratification, you know. All right. Andrea's turn, or Kenny still going?
Kenny was talking, and then...
No, I'm done.
Oh, okay. Let's see. I went out and camped. So when Jake came to town, our house is very small, and having three people in the house that all need to sleep in it is... it's... I don't know. It's not easy. So I was like, well, I'm just... You know, I've really been wanting to go and, like, kind of explore this one area. So I'm going to go and just camp there, and I'll just go and explore around and camp out that night instead of just being in the house. So I missed Superfan Jake being here, unfortunately, because he is really fun to, I don't know, just hang out with. But I went out and camped and did a little elk scouting, and it was a lot of fun. I rode my e-bike to places where I wanted to like dump it and go hike, and that worked out really well. Found a bunch of, I saw a bunch of elk, and found like a trail that is not on any maps that connects a couple of different areas. And yeah, it was a really good couple of days of like riding and hiking. But I ran the battery out on the e-bike, and I wasn't even using it. I wasn't using it on like full power because that'll like drain it real quick, but ran the battery out and realized that I probably need to get one that's got a little more battery life because, you know, it's kind of a conundrum for me. Like I want like a fancy, like the new Epic 9, I'm sure we'll talk about it, just came out. It's like, goddamn, that's like exactly what I'd want in a normal bike. But also like, I'm not really doing that kind of riding that much. Like it'd be one of those things where I'd buy it and I'd be real excited about it for like a few weeks. And then it would just end up hanging in the garage while I was doing other stuff besides like riding it. And I don't know, this doesn't seem like the best use of my money. So I think that the next bike I get might be just like a, not necessarily more power. Like I don't care that much about the power on an e-bike, but I just really want a lot more battery life because it's a lot of fun to just ride it to some place where I want to go and hike and scout and kind of like explore around. And so I might, you know, like look for something more like that, more so than just a new, like normal bicycle.
Are you burning this thing down because you're doing multi-day things with it, or is it a single outing / day?
I've done both. I have burned it down in one day, like one ride. And this time it was 2 days. The first day wasn't really, I guess it was kind of a lot, a couple thousand feet of climbing, but I'm running it in like, the second mode, like not full on eco mode, but like the next bump, like power level up from that. So yeah, like I'm trying to like be really conservative with it, but at the same time, like this time of year at higher elevation, it's pretty chilly. So like, I don't want to sweat. What?
Get sweaty.
Yeah. Like I don't want to get really sweaty. And also like, I'm going to go hike. Like once I park it, I'm going to hike for like 2 or 3 hours. So I don't want to like also just burn my legs out because I'm not in super great shape right now. So like I kind of need like the help I can get. And also like if you get sweaty and it's just windy and, you know, like 40 degrees, you get really fucking cold when you stop. And I've got extra layers and stuff with me. Like I'm prepared for it, but like it's just a lot like faster and more efficient to just try to pedal easy enough to where you just don't get like the full body sweat going and have to like put all your warm clothes on as soon as you get off your bike.
The reason I ask about the multi-day thing is if it's a multi-day thing that's killing the bike, maybe it's time to get like a nice battery bank or a generator.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that. And I probably still, even if I do get something that's got a longer battery life, I probably need what you're talking about. because I do want to use it. Like, where I'm planning to elk hunt this September, I'm definitely planning on using it to get around a lot, because there are a lot of trails that are open to motor vehicles that you can't drive a truck or, you know, a car on them, because they're like moto trail. But yeah, like the e-bike is really good for that stuff, but they're just really long climbs. Like, it's, you know, like 2,000 or 3,000 feet to get to where I want to go. And it's way faster and, you know, just efficient to use the e-bike to get there. But also, like, that, you know, even on a lower power setting, like, that burns some battery up.
Well, I think it's time for you to get like a 1 to 2 kilowatt hour battery bank, because then you can do all kinds of stuff. You can run a heated blanket. You can run an air fryer. You can charge your, you can charge your e-bike. You can do all kinds of awesome shit with it.
Don't you, you have a generator to like charge that, and then you use that battery bank, right?
I got multiple generators. I got multiple power banks. I got air fryers. I got electric blankets. I got coffee makers.
You're going to have to like tell, like, you got to send me your setup, because I'm probably going to need that this fall.
It's freaking dope. It really does. It truly does. Like, I'm trying to be funny here a little bit, but there.
No, no. Kenny said heated blanket, and I'm fucking all in. I'm going in on this, because then when I go to moto stuff and it's cold in the morning, like, if I wake up cold, I could just click on a heated blanket like a princess.
Oh, it's freaking sick. I did it a couple weekends ago. It was amazing.
I mean, I've camped many times now, like, where the overnight low is like in the 20s, and the stuff I have to camp in, like, my clothes are comfortable and cozy and everything, but it's pretty fucking cold to, like, it's difficult. It's not hard to sleep. I actually sleep really well when it's cold, like, all curled up in a cocoon, but like,
but yeah, I mean, given the option,
it's really hard to get out of the blanket when you need to get out of the blanket.
Given the option in life, if someone's like, you want a heated blanket or do you not want a heated blanket?
No, you're right. And also, I mean, for anyone at home that's like rolling their eyes and stuff, like, understand, and I'm going to speak for Kenny a little bit here, but, you know, I'm not trying to be ugly, but if you go and stay in an Airbnb for 1 weekend or like 2 weekends over the year, you've probably spent more than that power bank would cost. And if you had a van, you would spend way more money kitting it out to do all the things you wanted to do than this thing costs. And I think the places that
we have like a decent,
I don't think anybody is going to debate that at all. These things are getting they're way safer than they used to be, because they're all lithium iron phosphate. They're getting way better, more reliable, all the things. And you can get like a really nice 1 kilowatt hour one for probably $400 to $500. And for $1,000, you can get a 2 kilowatt one, roughly.
Dude, I'm seeing Home Depot has some on sale for, it's a 2,000 watt, $900 item on sale for $6.
Yeah, right. Like, they're getting so reasonable. And also, not only are they awesome if you're like an outdoorsy person camping, whatever, but if shit goes down, I know like your power goes off every Tuesday.
It blinked twice last night.
Yeah, but it'd be sick to have that thing, because you don't have to crank up a generator or any of that shit. And all you got to do is like go roll it inside, if it's not already inside already. You plug your fridge into it just so shit doesn't go bad. And then you plug a couple lights into it, and then you can air fry some nuggets or vacuum.
Yeah. That would be really useful, because we do have 2 outdoor freezers. I mean, granted, if the power goes up, usually like right now in the springtime, we get these like wet snowstorms. And that's what happened last night. Like, when the power blinked, it was because there was like, I'm sure it was like something fell on one power line and that section of power went out, and our power was out for like, I don't know, an hour, and then it came back on. But sometimes in the spring, we get like 12 inches of just the wettest, heaviest snow you can imagine, and the power's out for like 12 or 15 hours.
Got that WAS, that wet ass snow.
Yeah, got the wet ass snow. And yeah, it would be nice to be able to be like, well, yeah, if it goes on much longer, we can plug one of the freezers into this for a few hours and make sure it's below freezing. Then plug the other one into it for a few hours and make sure it's below freezing and none of our food goes bad. Because we have like a year's worth of meat in our freezers right now. Like, it's literally a year's worth of meat that is in 2 different, you know, outdoor freezers. If we lost one of those, it would be like financially bad.
I think it's definitely time that you guys pick one of those up.
and bad from a standpoint of like wild game meat and like yard raised chickens taste so much better than, like, I can't stand eating store-bought chicken. Is like the worst meat I can think of. It's just watery and flavorless and just has a weird texture. Because for the last 4 years, I guess, 3 or 4 years, we've been eating home-raised chicken. And it's way better. So yeah, like losing that would be a thing.
Do you think if you primarily fed a chicken like McDonald's, do you think you would be able to tell when you eat that chicken?
I don't think so. Because like the food that I feed the chickens is just your standard, like the cheap, high protein meat bird chicken food. It is nothing fancy. I mean, they get like, you know, we can't like compost in the, at least like when bears are out, we can't have a compost bin that has food in it because a bear will rip into it and like tear it apart and eat everything inside. And yeah, so like I feed, you know, food, like whatever we don't eat. Yeah, we'll save it for leftovers, but if it gets like a couple days old, we'll just feed it to the chickens.
Yeah, or even like, you know, all the like vegetable trimmings and scraps, and you know, about the only thing that we don't give the chickens are the things they're not supposed to get, like large amounts of onion. You know, like if we make burritos, when you scrape your plate and there's like a little piece of onion, that doesn't matter, but they don't get like when you cut the like the root end and the head end off the onion. And the skin and stuff, they don't get that. But
they don't touch they don't touch broccoli stumps, do they?
Oh, dude, they
love that stuff.
They love broccoli stumps.
Okay.
Though I don't feed them big ones anymore because I did have that one that like got one in her crop and died, like stuck. She got it stuck in there, and that was sad. But yeah, so they eat like the McDonald's basically version of chicken food, and they taste amazing. And really, like, I don't want to get on too much of a rant. The meat you buy in the grocery store, especially chicken, it's put in like a sodium, like a salt solution to get to cool off and chill. And it absorbs a lot of that. And so a lot of what you pay for when you go to the grocery store and you buy chicken especially, but other meats as well, but mostly chicken, a lot of what you pay for is water that just cooks out when you cook the chicken. So you're not really getting the full value of what you pay for there. So yeah, it's going back to the original point, a generator would be a good thing to have.
All right, what's up next?
I went and rode my bike and scouted around, and then I worked a couple of days in Leadville at Leadville BC Casa, and it was nice. It's a really nice place to work. I enjoy every time I go up there and work. And Raphael, the owner, is probably the most gracious and appreciative boss that I've ever worked for. So, yeah, if you ever get a chance to stop in there, if you're ever going through Leadville, highly recommend stopping in there. Even if I'm not there, I'm trying to get up there for 2 or 3 days a week, like every other week over the summer. So, yeah, stop in if you ever go through Leadville. Just say hi. Even if I'm not there, just stop in, get a sticker, t-shirt, whatever.
Buy four bicycles.
Yeah, buy a bicycle, whatever.
Four of them. See, it's called anchoring. You tell them to buy four, and then they buy two.
And the dude that's working there, like, more often than I am, Sean, he is, you know, I've only met him once in person, but I did, like, put hands on a couple of bikes that he's worked on, and, like, it's on point. Like, he's good. So, yeah, like, if you got to get bike work done, highly recommend that place as a shop. But we can move on now to other stuff. Oh, wait. I got to tell you about the unhinged dinner that I made. Sorry, Matt just rolled his eyes. He wants to make it a short show, and I'm making it a long show. I made like a pastry crust out of some extra bread dough that I had that was like cheddar cheese and green chili dough. And then I like, if you like, so a lot of people, you have no idea what I'm talking about, but a few listeners might know this. I made laminated dough. It's where you roll the bread dough out, and then you put like a layer of usually butter on it, and then you fold it over a few times and roll it out again. You put more fat on it, and you fold it over and roll it again. So you have like layers of dough and fat, and it gets all like crispy and delicious.
It's the carbon fiber of bread.
Yeah, but I put bacon grease in it instead of butter. like frozen bacon grease, and then I rolled it out and I made like a cheese sauce with vegetables and bacon in it. And it was, and then cooked it as like a giant pizza made out of like bacon dough, cheddar bread, pastry, and this like cheese sauce and vegetables. And it was really fucking amazing. But we can move on. I'll just keep it at that. So if you're ever wondering, you can laminate bread dough with frozen bacon grease.
Okay.
So new shit. We want to get the epic out of the way first. I feel like that's the most
epic thing to talk about.
The exciting new shit.
All right. Kenny, I know you've touched on one. Thoughts?
It's another epic. It's going to be really nice. I think they've got it pretty dialed now. They basically just tucked the shock up there a little bit more. They got rid of the swap box. There's more real estate in the front triangle. It's a little bit lighter, probably because they deleted the swap box. Other than that, it's not like a huge departure from the old one, to be honest.
Ooh. I have one thing that I think is huge.
Is it 19 pounds with,
no.
with the highest end build?
Yeah, if you get the one without robotic suspension, so it's got like, I don't even know if it has lockouts, to be honest. I think it's just straight up, but it's not remote lockouts, right?
No, it has remote locks.
It does, okay.
But they're just cable.
Got it. So they just go more basic on the suspension, and they do super lightweight brakes from Trick Stuff. Other than that, it's the same wheels. They put super light tires on it, and it's cool. It's impressive. Like, it's with no pedals, it's, we'll call it 19 pounds because it's like 18 and 15 ounces. So
no, it's 19.2, I think.
Oh, well, whatever it is. It's with pedals, it's going to be like 20 pounds, which is impressive. But people have been building full suspension race mountain bikes to between 20 and 23 pounds forever. I know that's a huge, I just gave you a freaking 3 pound window there. But anyway, I don't know. I'm just not as impressed by that stuff these days. Weight weenie stuff, I'm kind of over all of that. It was fun for a while, but you realize that the compromises are typically not worth it. And in this case, I think having the robot suspension, there are people that don't want it. I get it. And it can have problems. But for the most part, if you want like the latest and greatest set it and forget it experience, the robot suspension works pretty good if you like the feeling of lockouts. So I wouldn't take the absolute featherweight tires and all the other stuff. And I guess it's cool to brag to your buddies that you have an insanely light bike, but I don't know. It's not for me.
The one thing that is a departure from Epic is size-specific chainstays.
That's true.
That is, so I'm going to talk about chainstays a lot in this show. I think that's something that's really overlooked.
I think you're right.
I think it's always going to be easier for Andrew to keep her front tire planted, because if you drew a, and I understand there's bottom bracket drop, so it's not going to be a perfect right triangle. But
it's real simple. As the bike gets bigger or smaller, the whole thing should probably get bigger or smaller.
Well, yeah, but like even growing the chainstay how they do, my chainstay, I want to talk about it as A squared, B squared equals C squared. A squared would be the chainstay. B squared would be my phone making a shit ton of noise. And then C squared or B would be from the bottom bracket to my sit bone. And then from the sit bone back to the axle would be the longest line on this triangle. And I really think that's why I'm so intrigued by a 500 millimeter chainstay. I know that bike wouldn't be racy, but I just really want to ride one to know how it feels, because there's just, my seat is a lot higher than Andrea's, and my chainstay only gets 10 millimeters longer than hers on an Epic. That's just not really that much. And we'll say, spent more time on the Kona now. That's what I rode during the Enduro. I didn't do the Enduro. I just rode around and hung out all day. Did most of the climbs, yada, yada. The Kona is a shorter travel, lighter bike than my Stump Jumper Pro or Stump Jumper Evo was. My Kona does not climb as well in a very specific situation, which is you are not traction limited. You know, you have good traction. You have a fairly buff trail, and you hit that, you know, brick-sized bump in the trail with the front wheel. The Kona just wants to lift more, and the chainstays are 9 or 11 millimeters shorter, and it just has to play into that. So yeah, that's my chainstay gripe. I think the Epic's going to be cool. I have a hot take that a lot of people aren't going to like, which is the Epic Evo sold really well to a lot of people that should not have bought an Epic Evo.
How so?
I think a lot of people have purchased that bike to ride as a trail bike. And if Specialized has killed the Epic Evo, which it appears they have, I don't have any insider information. I know just as much as you do, you being general listeners. There is a huge chasm between the Epic and the Stump Jumper, and they really need to fill that.
I agree. They either need to come out with an Evo, and hopefully it's maybe a little bit more than just slap a 130 fork on it, or they need to revive a chisel
camber.
Or a camber or a stump ST, whatever it's going to be. I do agree that a proper downcountry bike or a light trail bike, I think they're missing that. Totally agree.
Which the Stump Jumper totally used to be. I had a lady that came in. She had a 8 or 10 year old Specialized Stump Jumper. She wanted a new bike. Had her test ride a Hey Hey. She came back, swiped her, like literally was just like, yeah, I'm going to take this home. Like, there was no questions about it. And there's just not a compelling product from Specialized that lives in that same space to do that. And I have nothing against selling Konas. It's just there are a lot of people that are going to buy their 15th Specialized, and Specialized doesn't have something that might fit their needs the best. And the thing that I'm most afraid of is probably the wrong way to put it, but those people are going to buy Stump Jumpers when they don't need them. And they're going to lug around a 36. Like, right now, Specialized doesn't make a 34 bike. And that's just really weird. So,
I agree. I think Specialized is missing a lot of stuff. They're missing a lot of good price point bikes. They're missing a lot of aluminum bikes. They're missing downcountry / light trail. I just think they're missing a lot of stuff.
After we finish this, I got to talk about one frame that I worked on that I want to rant about for a minute.
Well, while we're talking about chainstays, I'm just going to pull up this. It was an article of, it was, where is this? Bespoke London Show, whatever that brand is. I don't even remember the name of it.
You know what I think you might need, Matt? You need adjustable chainstays that are connected to a dropper lever. And you can extend E-Boy those things out with the push of a button.
No, I just think that this is something that I have said for a very long time. Either my bike doesn't fit or Andrea's bike doesn't fit. There is no way that both of our bikes fit. So, I mean, if you look at my bike compared to hers, my bike is considerably smaller for me as a human. Wheelbase doesn't grow proportionally with the human. Chainstay length doesn't grow proportionally with the human. All this stuff. So,
I mean, I think it's just a matter of cost at that point for the manufacturer. Yeah, if they had to have
this from the lady that loses her mind when the women's pants don't come in the color she likes.
No, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying that it's the same reason why I don't have some stuff in the size that I want is because manufacturers don't want to. They know that people won't buy. Like, if Matt had to pay $500 extra dollars for his bike, or someone who just needed an extra large bike had to pay extra money for their bike because it was more carbon.
No, every bike.
And a different mold.
But every bike would be $500 more.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the reason why. It's just a price thing. It's a cost thing that, you know, they don't think the consumer, if consumers proved that they would pay more for a bike that fit them 10% better, you know, they might do it.
I'm going to go the opposite way here.
That's why SRAM made mineral oil brakes, because consumers wanted fucking mineral oil brakes with a different color and blend of mineral oil.
Did they, though? I don't think that's why.
I don't
why.
Think it was consumers that did that. I think it was an OE request. However, what I'm trying to talk about...
the OE request was based on consumer demand.
Is I look at these 32-inch wheeled bikes. There's one on this bespoke London thing, and it's launching the Boyd 32 wheels, and it's got the bendy seat tube. So the seat tube angle is like, sure. The seat tube angle is very 2014 Trek Fuel EX. And I look at that and I'm like, great. How in the world am I ever going to get my seat in the position that I like on a bike where the seat tube angle just points backwards at the rear tire? Like, I haven't thrown a leg over one. Haven't even touched a 32-inch tire. But I just look at this and I'm like, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a bigger 29er. I don't want a 32 that, and I might be wrong because I wasn't there, but it's like, let's make this 29er ride like a 26er. Well, no, it's a fucking 29er. It needs to ride like a 29er. And this 32er should ride like a 32er. And I want long chainstays. I've had a lot of discussions about this recently, and the answer is I just need to pay someone to build me this in 29, and it's going to be expensive, and I'm not going to do it. So I'll just bitch about it on the podcast.
So I have a thought. Do you think that we have too many sizes of bikes? Because I think maybe we have too many different size bikes. I think we're trying to – it's so many goddamn SKUs. It's more molds. It's more cost. What if we pair out a couple sizes of bikes and surely we can make them work? And what if you actually make the small like really small and you make the medium medium and you make the large a large, as in they have different chainstay lengths and different ride characteristics and they're like very different bicycles, and surely we can fudge all the stuff in between, you know, moving saddles on rails and stems and all this to accommodate pretty much everybody, especially with modern geo and dropper posts and stuff, especially on mountain bikes.
Adjustable geometry too. Like, I've been looking around at e-bikes, and the one that I've been looking at has like a flip chip in the at the rear through axle where you flip it around and you add length to the chainstay.
I kind of think there needs to be like three size mountain bikes, and I think that would probably work, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you took some of the stuff that you can do to change geometry, like
up next, Kenny has us all riding in one shoe.
Maybe I'm not going that far. I'm just thinking out loud here. We have there are so many SKUs in the bicycle industry. It's out of control.
I mean, I think a different way to approach it then is stop offering everything in three different colors. That's the place to start.
I don't disagree. But you know what? Maybe SRAM's trying to solve the world. You know, they came out with the S stuff. They're reducing part numbers. Okay. They're doing exactly what I asked.
All right.
By the way, I talked with SRAM about that in person.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Did it go over like a fart in church?
No, it went over great.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Can I bitch about my one manufacturer frame thing?
Go for it.
So I had to put a new cable housing in a Canyon Spectral carbon. And I just want to say, I think, you know, Germany is like known for their engineering. I think that what they do is they take the engineers in Germany that fail engineering school. And they're like, you know what? You've got to go work for Canyon for the next 5 years.
I mean, you say they're engineering, but have you ever seen someone work on a BMW?
Yeah, I mean, they do a lot of stuff where the outcome is maybe really good, but the process of getting there is very expensive and very complicated and difficult to maintain.
Yeah, so
and
like,
on the other end of the spectrum, Andrea is bitching that a very budget direct-to-consumer bike doesn't have the easiest serviceability.
But with it being something that is very budget, direct-to-consumer, they could have just put, I don't know, some, like, put the holes in a different spot or just put some, like, cable holders on it so you could run it externally.
God, no. External cables, people are going to lose their mind.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's great, though. I think it's great what Canyon's doing. I want them to continue making shitty bikes.
Yeah, so, like, I had to... So, there's this... For those of you that don't know, in a Canyon Spectral, and they're not all the same, but in this particular bike, there's a plastic like tube that you should be able to just pull the like the housing out of and put it back in like you would in a normal bike, except it's like loose in the frame and it's like a friction fit. So basically you put the housing in and it's just fucking stuck there in a loose plastic tube. It's not attached to the frame. So I couldn't get the housing out until I took the fucking bike apart. Like, I had to take the chainstays, disconnect, like, the pivot above the bottom bracket, disconnect the chainstays, like, at the derailleur, and take that part of the bike off in order to get this plastic tube out. And then I had to clean out the plastic tube because the housing was like fused in there. And I ended up like putting the housing into a vise and pulling on the plastic tube until it came off. I mean, this customer paid like $150 to get one new piece of housing put in his bike. But it was like rusted on both ends. Like, it had gotten so much like dirt and you know, like road salt and shit in it from him riding it around, that it was fucked. Like, it needed to be replaced. And it was fucking expensive because I had to take the fucking bike apart. And it took a long time to do that. You know, to take it apart and put it together. And it's like, there are so many better ways that you could do that, probably for less money. Look at other manufacturers. Like, I know other manufacturers, like, don't look at the German ones. Look at some of the other ones and see how they're doing it. And maybe do it that way, you know? Just make it an open hole. Like, fuck, like, Pivot does that. Just have a fucking open hole in the top tube and then the bottom of the down tube, and you gotta fish for it for like a minute, but like, it's not that hard. And then just do it that way. My God. Because the plastic tube was like, it's like kind of a hard plastic. It's barely flexible and it rattles. Like, it's not like it's holding the housing in place so it doesn't like make noise in the down tube. It makes more noise in the down tube because it's like a hard, it's like a loose, hard plastic coating that you have to fish the housing through. So, yeah. Canyon, fuck you. That's all I got to say.
Making really good stuff is hard. It really is. Making something that is easy to manufacture, it makes sense, it doesn't rattle, it does all the things that we want it to do. And also, when you have it in your hand and you just look at it, you know how it goes together. Like, it makes sense. You can't accidentally put something together backwards, for example. There's so many nuances to engineering, especially in the aspect of, we need to manufacture this thing and then end users need to use this thing and service this thing. There's a hell of a lot. Like, there's an entire world that goes into that stuff, and it's not easy.
Yeah, I guess. But I won't rant about it anymore. I've made my point.
I love nothing more than having something that is new to me. It's in my hand. You look at it and you know exactly how it's supposed to go together.
I mean, that's kind of like, I looked at this Canyon and I'm like, there's only one way I can do this. And I actually searched the internet some to make sure I wasn't wrong, that I wasn't overcomplicating it. I'm like, there's no way I have to take this apart in order to change the housing. And I looked on the internet and yeah, like, that was just what I had to do. I mean, if it was brand new and this stuff was still new and didn't have like dirt, you know, and maybe a little sweat and stuff, like, that was kind of like making extra friction between the housing and the plastic tube, like, that might have worked for me to just pull the housing out and put a new one in. But it wasn't fucking working in the shape this bike was in.
Laughs and aluminum stump jumper 14.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, the Mayhem had external housing and it was wonderful. I normally don't mind internally routed stuff because most manufacturers do it in a way that, like, it's not a ton.
It's just cheap. That's the thing. The Canyon is cheap, and you can't have nice and cheap. And when Kenny's saying it's hard, I think what he also could have said is it's expensive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's so much thought and iteration that happens to make a product that is dialed. It's fucking difficult. It's really difficult.
And the other Canyon that I worked on that was a different model, I don't remember which one. It was the more cross-country-ish one.
Lux.
Maybe it was a Lux, I don't know. But it had, instead of the cable running through the chainstay, it came out of the bottom bracket area somewhere, and then it had like this little, like a, it was like a bottom chainstay protector that also held the housing, but it was so poorly shaped to the shape of the bike that the action of the suspension had broken the front bolt off of this little protective cover, and it was hanging down like below the chain ring and like catching on stuff.
You just got to zip tie it in place.
Like, I did.
Yeah, it's cheap.
I did. I
also, good luck getting in contact with Canyon to order that part. I mean, it's just how it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, it fuck. Those bikes just, I'm not cool with them.
All right. What's next? O-chain?
Yeah, there's a bunch of new O-chain shit. I say new. It's been massaged.
They massaged the O-chain.
Spider massage.
Yep. It's a little cheaper than it used to be. It's probably more readily available than it used to be. You can get an adjusty boy one or a not adjusty boy one.
They redesigned them to meet SRAM's quality standards.
Do you know anyone that had an old O-chain?
No.
I do. They were not easy to work on.
Yeah. And I think the service intervals were perhaps more frequent than this one.
They were very aggressive, and they weren't kidding around.
There you go.
Yeah, it sounds like they put new contamination protection, different seals on them to keep lubrication in and keep water out.
So in this case, this relationship seems to be a good one. Take a really good idea that's unique, that's 80% of the way there, and then use your economies of scale and your engineers who specialize in mass production and serviceability and let them go at it.
And you know what I can respect about this is that SRAM, and I don't know, I'm assuming O-Chain did this already and SRAM has just, again, like massaged it. They have a Shimano Spider compatible O-Chain.
No, they don't.
What is that then?
That's for e-bikes.
Oh, I thought that was Shimano when I saw it.
Right, yeah. Now it's 3-bolt, 8-bolt.
So the one huge thing they're missing here, they're missing a bunch of e-bikes, basically.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
What is the pattern that's on there?
It's for Bosch, I think.
Okay. I don't know. Even though I'm kind of shopping for e-bikes right now, I don't know really that much about them.
Golly.
Because I've really just been looking at battery life.
No, sorry. I'm bummed because I just logged into the old B2B to see how quickly I could get one for myself, and the gratification will not be instant. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's kind of how like I've been looking at like bikes with the Avanox motors, and not really because the Avanox is like obscenely powerful like we've talked about, but because they have just ultra long battery life and just some other like usability features that I like.
If you look at it very objectively, I haven't put hands on one yet, but just you can look at this stuff and read what they do. They've got a ton of great battery options. They've got really good range extenders.
Yeah.
All the rest of the stuff, the way the display works and all the stuff, they've thought about pretty much everything. I'm sure there's some chinks in the armor, but for the most part, it seems pretty dialed. I think there's a reason why so many big companies are scared of DJI is because they did a really good job.
Yep.
All right. What else we got? We got talked about O-Chain. We talked about the Epic. Is there anything else that we need to hash out on the Epic? I think we pretty much hit it all. They don't really have a lot of entry-level stuff yet, which is really annoying. They always do that. They're going to bring out the top-tier stuff first. But availability has just been bad. It's been bad on Epics for 6-plus months, if not a year plus. And it just kind of sucks.
Well, and I think they're missing a bunch of their other, like, dude, I need rock hoppers.
Oh, they're missing everything.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on, Prevelo and Kona have some cool full suspension kids bikes. That's, I don't know.
I saw those. Those look cool.
Little kids need to shred. We had a... I'm not trying to knock on what Kona or Prevelo is doing, but when you get into 24 and 26 inch kids bikes, it's usually some pretty old recycled stuff, and it's just all scaled down. But like, I had a Rocky Mountain Reaper in the shop today, and like, it's a cool bike. Like, they're fine.
I think the big thing here, it's okay, in my opinion, to have, I'm going to call it B tier stuff. Does it need to have XTR level brakes or whatever? Like, absolutely not, in my opinion.
Pounds.
Exactly. So I don't think it needs to be like super high quality stuff necessarily, but have reasonable suspension that's rebuildable on it. But also make the entire thing bespoke enough that you can make it physically lighter. That is what's really good. I think Woom does a pretty good job with that, where their bikes are like actually a lot lighter than everything else, and it makes a pretty big difference for a super tiny lightweight rider.
Mm-hmm.
So don't just cram on, don't make a full suspension bike that weighs 30 pounds and it's a 24. You can't fucking do that.
Well, and that's where I was gonna say, like, one, if I had kids, and two, if I had a lot of money, like, my kid's bike would have light bicycle carbon rims and bird spokes. And I'd be running like XX1 11 speed for ground clearance. And I would be on the dark, deep, hidey holes of Alibaba finding like 145 carbon cranks, you know. And it'd be like, oh, some old level ultimate two pistons. Here you go, little Jimmy or Sally. And then it'd be like, oh, titanium railed VGB Volt saddle in a small. This will be good. Oh. Carbon handlebar. Oh, I'm going to get you a smoky carbon stem because you weigh 100 pounds and you'll never break it. Like,
I think the big thing, I think the big thing is you don't necessarily have to have expensive parts, even though you can have light and expensive. I'm thinking you just do kind of what Woom does, is you rethink it a little bit. And yeah, it involves new parts, but maybe you don't need to have a 27 mil stanchion rear shock. Maybe a 22 is the answer. And the fork, it needs to be nice and rebuildable, but you can make it have 28 or 30 mil stanchions. I know those things exist, but maybe not
right
in the nice version. See what I'm saying? Like you can make stuff physically smaller because the rider is so much lighter. And then it doesn't have to be that super high-end schmulky bar or whatever. It's just lighter because it's smaller.
Yeah, I know where you're coming from, but like the 26-inch fork is kind of a recycled dirt jump fork in some ways.
Yeah, but I'm saying if they can do it and not fully recycle it, I think that you really could make an actually lighter bike because Woom does it with their stuff.
I think what you're saying is you would want a 27.5 Sid Ultimate shimmed down a little bit, and you would want a Sid rear shock, not a Super Deluxe, and you would want, you'd want a bike that comes across like the frame itself, you want to start bordering on fragility rather than scaled down, you know, because
yeah,
that's
kind of
what I'm hearing,
kind of. And it doesn't need to be 140 millimeter descendant crank. It can actually be, it has to be kind of its own crank.
Yeah,
because 140 millimeter descending crank is going to be heavy as shit, but it's completely unnecessary. A 100-pound kid's not going to snap a descending crank.
Yeah, I think, you know, with kids' bikes, like most people have more than one kid. If you make them slightly nice, like in the way that Kenny's talking about, like scale stuff down, but also keep it serviceable so that it lasts for both of your kids. And then you like sell it to your buddy who's got a kid that's 2 years younger than your two kids that outgrew that bike, right? If you just make them to where they can like be serviced and just keep running longer, like I don't think that's going to be bad. Like I don't think you're going to miss sales because they cost a little bit more.
All right.
You want to talk about those wolf tooth grips?
Do.
They look kind of cool.
Have you seen that? You have these pulled up yet, Kenny?
I do not.
Find the wolf tooth works bar ends. Before we get into it too deep, it says you have to either buy an open-ended grip or cut the end out. No. You find a socket that's the same size as your grip or as your bar diameter. The external diameter is the same, like close to 22.2 millimeters. You get that bitch red hot with a hand torch, and then you melt a hole in the grip.
There you go.
Saw someone do it for a moto grip, and I was like, what? No way. And then the next time I needed to cut the ends out of some grips, I did it. And I was like, holy shit, that works.
You know what I did on my grips? It wasn't quite that sexy. But instead of sawing off the end and making them physically shorter, like I did
you
on my previous ones, I
drilled
just
a hole in it with a step bit.
Yeah. And that worked pretty good.
Yeah. When you do it with heat, it doesn't, like, even the rubber looks good when you're done. It's pretty cool.
Interesting.
You just got to get it really fucking hot. You just can't be scared.
Yeah, well, the wolf tooth grip, like this bar end, kind of like you can put the outside.
What am I looking at? They're alloy bar end plugs?
No, this is like a, it looks like plastic. It kind of wraps around, not wraps around your hand, but it's like a, it angles inboard towards your hand.
Is this on their website, or was it a spy shot that was taken in the display case at the wolf tooth booth at Sea Otter?
I mean, this is at Sea Otter, but it's like a whole article with like pictures and everything, like not spy shot pictures.
Look at your phone, Kenny. I sent it to you.
Got it. Oh, that one. Wonder what the fuck that thing was. It was looked so weird. I didn't even click on it.
That's what she said.
So what the fuck does it do?
The idea is that you can, when you're turning, you can kind of push on the grip bar end thingy. And when you're descending, you can loosen your grip without feeling like your hand's going to, like you can kind of bump into it. You don't feel like your hand's going to wander off the bar.
Okay.
I don't know. They're supposed to be $35.
I mean, I am not opposed to that. I grab my bar in a weird way, apparently. I wear my grips out on the ends. Like the last inch of my grip is worn on the top.
Sounds like these might actually help.
Yeah, maybe you need these so you don't have to grip so hard all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like
no, I don't grip hard. Might... I actually grip loosely, but I actually like let my grip wants to get like wider, if that makes sense. And like I'm not gripping.
You
I'm
know
not,
they make wider bars.
I run pretty wide bars. I run like 780s.
Jesus, how tall are you? Like 5'7"?
Hey, now, come on. 5'7" and a half. 5'7" and a half.
No, really. Aren't you like 5'10"?
5'10", yeah. So,
yeah.
I guess maybe I'm not gripping as hard with like my, where you would normally grip hard, which would be like your thumb and index finger, that kind of circle that you make right there. I guess I probably go elbows out a little bit more. And maybe I need a different
separation.
Maybe I need a different sweep bar, but I kind of just like hover. I just hover on top of the grip. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I don't feel like I lose control. I'm just letting you know that for whatever reason, I wear mountain bike grips in a weird fucking way.
Yeah, you should try these. It sounds like that might actually like be good for you.
But maybe it'd be bad because then I'd run into a wall all the time and it would feel fucked up.
I don't know, dude. They retail for $35. Just fucking try them.
Just get a pair, man.
I'm scared.
Don't be scared. Dude, if you don't like them, just put them on top of your next firebomb.
Yeah, that's true.
Allegedly. All right, we have like one listener question. It's a little long and we're kind of deep in the show. Do you want to save it for next week?
No.
No to answering the question or?
No to saving it. Just okay. Pull it up. I'll read it. Just angle your computer a little bit because my eyes hurt.
This is it's got like a main question and then like a little add-on.
Oh, God.
I told you it was longer. This is from Tyson.
I need the mouse. I built a bike a couple years ago I used for intermittent commuting to work. It's currently set up single speed and I'm looking for advice on getting robots slapped on that bitch. I don't know much of anything about electronic shifting besides DI2 and Axis are things that exist. My route to work, Western North Carolina mountains, is only about 3 miles one way and has a decent flat stretch and one steep mountain that I would say requires about 500 watts for maybe 20 to 30 seconds to climb. I'm set up 3819 because any harder gear means I may not make the climb. It frankly sucks on the flat part where I want to go as fast as possible because there's traffic on that road. My bike is a 2012 or 2013 Jamis Dragon SS frame, shiny bronze and white decals. It's non-boost QR with sliding dropouts for single speed. No cable routing, hence wanting robots. My wheels are carbon Revolves from around the same time period with an HG free hub. I do have a derailleur hanger for the frame. I'd want to use minimal parts to add gears and am frugal. I need a cassette, derailleur, and shifter, but I'm hoping to keep the free hub body if I can. I don't care 10, 11, 12 speed, whatever will work best with my setup. Appreciate the help. If you have a Gmail address, I can send pics, links, and slide in your DMs. No, and more info. And then the next one is, I submitted at lunch about electronic shifting on my Jamis bike, but forgot a couple of details that may be needed. Race face cranks. Race face BB with Cane Creek metal collar. Fuck that stripped ass 2mm plastic collar. My chain ring appears removable from the crank spider. And that's from T-Dog. So, this is what you're going to do, T-Dog. You are going to get a race face cinch direct mount chain ring, 6mm offset. They make a steel one. It's cheaper than a motherfucker. Then you're going to get yourself an S100 chain. Then you're going to get yourself, I don't know, probably an S100. I haven't learned the new stuff. An NX1150 cassette. Then you're going to buy yourself an S500 derailleur. And
wait, does that cassette go on an HD free hub? Yeah.
Nobody knows. It's,
you do know, Kenny. And then
I was going to say he should just get 10 speed, but keep going.
No, he wants. There is no 10 speed wireless.
You just fucking zip tie it to the frame.
He wants robots.
I know, but I'm
saying, let the man have his robots first.
You don't have to get robots. You can zip tie.
And this motherfucker's commute is 3 miles. He don't need anything. He could drive. It ain't that bad for the planet, but he wants the robots. Let the man buy what he wants.
I'm just saying that
if
he doesn't realize that he can zip tie housing to the frame on his 3 mile commute, it might be a more economical option. But keep going. Tell him the robot option. I'm just getting
that's what he needs.
Option.
He needs a controller. He needs an S500 rear derailleur. He needs an NX or S100 cassette. He needs an S100 chain. And he needs a steel chain ring from Race Face in whatever size he chooses because they fucking make them. So, bam.
All right.
What I fuck up, Kenny?
Nothing. That's the right answer.
God damn.
And I'm saying if you can find some used 10 speed of whatever flavor, what Matt said, you can do that one by chain ring from Race Face in steel because it is cheap as a motherfucker. And you can put a 10-speed drivetrain on that. It won't come off that chain ring. That's a good chain ring. And you can zip tie your housing to that frame. That's the cheap option. Matt gave you the robot option. It's going to cost a little more. It's definitely going to look way better than zip-tied housing. But I'm just saying, if you're trying to do it as cheap as possible, zip ties are an option.
Well, the thing that I'm not hearing in all of this that I am understanding is he wants to be able to swap back and forth.
Yeah, it's definitely easier with robots.
The steel chain ring only goes up to 32. That might be a little bit of a showstopper for your commuter bike. You might have to buy a more expensive aluminum chain ring.
Yeah, it's not that much. It's not that ton, though.
It goes from like $20 to like $70 for the big ones, I'm pretty sure. Let's see. I don't sell a lot of the big ones, so.
Fuck, I haven't pulled up the patrons to read patrons. Just give me a minute.
Oh, no, the alloy one's only like $50.
Oh, there was one more new shit that I just wanted to breeze over really quick. They have it on Bike Rumor. At Sea Otter, Lachlan Morton has instant coffee called Pretty Great Instant Coffee. I'm sure it's fine. I just want to, if you're looking for like instant coffee that is like...
bearable.
It's bearable. Look, no instant coffee is good. Okay. I'm sure even this one is like not as good as just like a pour over on some fresh ground beans. Matt found this Nescafe Ice Roast instant coffee. It's made so you can mix it up in cold water and make iced coffee. It's good hot.
Well,
and
yeah.
When I say good, it's... Yeah, I take instant coffee when I bike packed, when I've backpacked, when I go camp, anytime I use instant coffee. The Nescafe is the best instant coffee. Still not as good as regular coffee. But it's like... What was this for, like, this, how big is this bottle? 6 ounces, which is, like, a fuck ton of servings of instant coffee.
Yeah, it's 6 ounces, and let's see.
It's a jar full of instant coffee, and I think it was, like, $8 or $10 or something.
It was, maybe 10, it was either $9.95 or $10.95, I can't remember.
Yeah, it's way cheaper than any of the fancy stuff. And I don't think it's worse than any of the fancy stuff. It's better than Starbucks instant coffee for sure.
And I would rank it like this. Pour over, AeroPress, they're pretty much tied. Drip coffee. I feel like there's a pretty big jump down to drip coffee. And then a tiny jump down to this. And then a pretty big jump down to Folgers Instant. Like the kind that comes in like the little stick packs, you know, put in your pocket, put in your backpack type stuff. So this stuff's... This stuff's fine.
I just wanted to like tell people that there is the Nescafe Ice Roast. That's what you're looking for. It's like a glass jar with a blue plastic lid. Try that for your instant coffee. It's definitely not as packable. You'd have to put it in like another container if you just wanted like a single serve to take like, you know, backpacking or bikepacking or whatever. But yeah, it's for instant coffee. It's pretty fucking good, especially for cheap instant coffee. And we're going to have... A little dead air here while I look for patrons.
Oh, shit. They sell the Nescafe in go-packs.
Oh, cool. There you go.
Wow, that's actually really affordable. 96 packets is $36. That's not bad.
And I navigated away, but I did look at the cost of this stuff from Lachlan Morton, which might... Maybe it is better, but I still don't think it's going to be as good as, like, normal coffee. And I'm guessing it's probably about on par with this Ice Roast stuff. I don't know. I'm not really a coffee connoisseur, but I can definitely tell the difference between like a Folgers and other stuff. All right. Do we want to read patrons now?
You can.
All right. So our patrons at $10 a month or more. Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Mista Bombastic, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Shay King, The Caffeine Queen, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
Ooh, she nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Balls, Professor Triple X.
Wow.
At $11.11 per month, Howie Do It, Patamelon Disco Ball at $14 Australian, and at $20 a month, Andrea's Hormoning Podcast, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, and at $26.06 per month, JRA Patreon, still cheaper than Kenny's OnlyFans.
Wow, he's making big bucks.
Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Vermejo Charcoal Burner Gravel May 16th at 50.
50.
I didn't know you had an OnlyFans, Kenny.
Yeah, it's mostly feet stuff.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was
like full face content.
No, that's the thing. It's like the Stig, but naked.
All right.
So always a full face helmet, always goggles. And when the Motoralls come off, it gets serious. Isn't that what they're called? Motoralls?
Motoralls. You know, what's crazy? I'm on Weather Underground, just checking some weather for the weekend. And there's all those like ridiculous fake, just ridiculous weird ads at the bottom. Just shit that doesn't even make any sense. And then there's one of our e-bike batteries on eBay, like from our shop. That's nice. Freaking random as hell.
All right.
Yeah, I didn't think I paid that Weather Underground money, but apparently I did.
All right.
Well, maybe when you boosted it on eBay, eBay threw some money at it.
I don't know. So that's weird.
Oh, wow. Motoralls are sold out in all the good sizes.
Yeah, they're freaking sick.
Yeah, I want a pair.
All right. Are we all done?
Yep.
Shut it down.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.